हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, bottom of 44. Vijaya. Oh, one thing is you should mention. Wow, here he did it. It's the first time. When I was actually going to mention it, then he actually did it. Yeah, starting from here. Oh, maybe I mentioned it before. Putting the colon like that instead of a comma when someone's speaking. Okay. Vijaya, the scriptures forbid giving up the Diksha Guru. However, if he is incapable of imparting proper knowledge of devotion and of Vaishnava etiquette, how can he be in a position to teach? Raghunath Das Babaji. Before a person accepts formal initiation from a guru, he must test the guru as to whether he is well-versed in the Vedas and in the science of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Only such a bona fide guru is indeed able to instruct his disciples in all matters. It is true that the Diksha Guru should not be rejected, but there are two bona fide reasons to give him up. Right? In other words, it's not a matter of whim or this or that. So you're supposed to test beforehand, meaning that you're confident that he understands the scriptures and he's able to teach you how to perform devotional service based on those scriptures, right?
Mark?
Yes.
If the guru is following the parampara and everything, he's up to the standard, no problem, and then he teach you up to a certain level, and then if you want to continue, like with the Shiksha guru, with a different person, is that okay? Is that a
yeah, you know, that's standard, but it's generally one would take permission from the guru for that.
The Diksha Guru,
right? Because basically speaking, what you can say is in the Pancharatrik process here, the Diksha Guru is the responsible person. So that's why then in these matters then he would be involved. See, it's one can always get benefit, but if there's some further teaching or that, then one will take that from the Diksha Guru. But the point is one only does that means when there isn't anything really significant to be taught, right? It means, in other words, it'll be the same teachings. Does that make sense? It's not that the guru has more that he can teach you, and then you're going to the Siksha guru and not hearing from the Diksha guru. Does that make sense? It's when you know, it's just like, let's say you want to go to fourth grade, but you know, until you finish third grade, you don't go to fourth grade.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say, okay, you're in the first week of third grade, but then there's a fourth grade teacher, so he's a better teacher. You know, he can teach me more. Yes, but until you finish third grade, how are you going to do that? Yeah. Does that make sense? So sometimes devotees will come along and they bump into someone else, and then they go, oh, but he's saying, then they run off there. So that's not proper. The point is that to go further, dynamically further, then with the permission of the Diksha Guru, the Siksha Guru becomes more prominent. Like that. If such a case is there. You know. So you find that. Or if your Diksha Guru is somewhere else, you rarely see him, but there are Siksha Gurus who are always there. So by his blessings, then you hear from, you know, in other words, what they tell you to do and inspire you to do, that's what you do. Like that. Does that make sense? Otherwise, if that arrangement hasn't been made, you hear from them because of the Siksha Gurus, but then you also relate that back to the Diksha Guru.
Relate means?
Relate means what instructions you've gained, you know, that you find the value, then you also relate those to the Diksha Guru. You know, for his, you know, further comment or approval or some direction like that. But if he says, you know, you don't worry about it, you just hear from these devotees and they'll give you direction, then you can work just like that. Does that make sense? You don't have to relate it back. Okay. Yes.
Just to put it into perspective, when you're about to read, like saying that the spiritual master or the guru will teach everything, you know, that the disciple is supposed to know in devotion service. So this is about to be talking about the relationship between the guru and a brahmachari?
No, it's just the disciple. It's just guru and disciple. It's not necessarily brahmacharya. Brahmacharya, that was only the consideration when you were talking about living with. Because the brahmacharya, he himself, is living with for a certain amount of time. And then when he graduates and gets married, he's not living with.
Also yesterday you said that the guru will be quite general. They won't give any special instructions. So how will they...
No. We didn't say won't give special instruction. We were talking about sentimental extra special instruction. You've already gotten special instruction, but as you can understand, it's just generic devotional service. I need to be doing devotional service, right? The reason I'm having trouble is because I'm not thinking of Krishna here, or I'm not seeing that situation, the opportunities for Krishna consciousness, so spiritual master is giving direction on that. Having said all that, which is actually covers everything there, then the disciple asks, is there anything special for me? You know what I'm saying? That kind of sentiment is what we were discussing yesterday. That was the thing. So it means it's there everywhere, but especially once you cross the northern borders of Kazakhstan, it gets worse. Huh? Okay, south of the North Pole. West of Alaska, east of Finland. If the previous one didn't mean anything to you.
And
huh? Oh, I see. North means, you know, she's thinking, are you talking about Papua New Guinea or something?
Japan.
Oh, the Great Barrier Reef. Yeah, it's all those funny fish. Yeah, you got to watch those funny fish. Like that, yeah. Oh, well, you can look on a map if it doesn't make any sense. So that was the question was, does it apply to just a brahmachari?
Yeah, I just wanted to know how the spiritual master will be teaching the son everything that he would have to know in regards to emotion.
See, the point is what's the essential point is that you're understanding how to surrender to Krishna, how to function within Krishna consciousness. So there's principles there. Details on, you know, how you're going to wash your hands after going to the toilet, that the spiritual master doesn't have to teach you. That you can learn from others. The point is that the essence of surrendering to Krishna and trying to do everything in one's life to please Krishna in the association of devotees, that's what the spiritual master gives. All of the, so just that much is enough that you could perfect your life. So any more detail than that he may give, or you may get from other devotees. That doesn't matter. The principle is there.
I guess the main thing I'm trying to figure out is why we can't get that directly from Prabhupada's instruction.
Because the point is the book's not going to say, hey, you're not following this.
Okay.
Right? It means, in other words, you're a person, you need a person to tell you what's going on. But the point is that instruction will be nourished by reading Prabhupada's books. Like that. Does that make sense? But still, see, one has to have the connection because Krishna wants that kind of connection. means, because for Krishna, it is, if you don't have personal relationships with devotees, how are you going to have personal relationships with him? Right? And if you're not the devotee of his devotee, he's a devotee of his devotee. So if you're not a devotee of his devotee, what's the common point between you and Krishna? How do you have a relationship? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole right here. Yes.
The disciple, when he comes to the point of the spiritual master, is sleeping there, he has to make sure that the spiritual master is able to teach his knowledge from the scripture.
Right.
So on which level he can choose, but he's new, he doesn't know mind.
No, but he sees that whatever's there, it works for him. That's why we're saying is this is the generic process. But what we've been pointed out is that when you have the system when there's the founder Acharya, it makes it so much easier. You know the instructions are bona fide. Now the question is do they work for you? Right? Does that make sense? Means somebody gives instruction, so for one devotee that makes sense and they're very comfortable. But for another devotee, they can't relate to it. Does that make sense? So, like that, that's how that's what you're looking for. You know? Are you able to appreciate and being able to practically apply those instructions? So that means then this is someone there. So anybody who you find can do that, that's your Siksha Gurus. So traditionally then the prominent most one of those Siksha Gurus becomes the Diksha Guru. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because before we see is that in other ages the person was so qualified he'd go looking for the spiritual master. But now in this day we're looking for the donut shop and then the Harinam goes by. Right? And they sell us a BTG, so that's okay, one less donut, but okay. You know, that's actually what's going on. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difference. So that's why then the initiation has been split into two so that one can gradually go through and in other words, if you had to be totally qualified to get initiation, then it would be a long time. So these first ones are given so that powers it and it makes it so much more dynamic. And then you qualified much more quickly to get the second than if you just waited until you got that. You know? So then the whole thing's just designed for, you know, us. You know? Like that, you know? In other words, the unfortunate souls of Kali Yuga are the niche market for the Harinam Sankirtan. Like that. Is that yeah. You had something? No. Yes.
We were just wondering if it would be possible for people to speak a little louder when they ask questions because it's not here.
Ah, yes. Yes, it would be possible. We can ask whether they will speak louder. That's another consideration. But okay, so then, so in other words, the Diksha Guru is never rejected. So, but he says that there are two bona fide reasons to give him up if these reasons come up. First, if for some reason or another at the time of initiation the disciple did not recognize the devotional caliber of the guru and later found out that the guru was neither conversant with the conclusions of Shastra nor a Vaishnava, so that he, the disciple, could not make any spiritual progress, then he, the disciple, should reject the unqualified guru. Many, right? So, but what did we talk here? So, see, he doesn't know the scriptures and the conclusion of the scriptures, and he's not a devotee. Right? So, now, what does this mean? This means the family guru. How many here have had family gurus before becoming a devotee? Okay, so we can understand this one's not one that we're... No, I'm just saying raise your hand. You know, like that. Yeah, no, we had so many gurus. You know, like that. Like that. like, you know, Beatles.
Yeah,
you know, so many people were there. Right there, so. Eric Clapton. All great, great stalwarts in the line. Right, like that.
For opera.
Yeah, yeah, you know. And there's this thing, what was that guy's name? W.C. Fields.
Oh.
Yeah, W.C. Fields.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. You know.
Good one.
Yeah, so in other words, they're family gurus. So in other words, was initiated by the caste Goswami guru because the family line's at the tradition is there. But he doesn't actually know the conclusions of scripture. He's just there because that's what they do. Your father's a caste Goswami. Then he initiates the devotees. You grow up. When you get big enough, then the next group of disciples, you'll start taking disciples. That's just the way it goes. I've even heard them talking about it. I remember sitting with one caste Goswami, and he was telling his son, because his son wasn't sure about something. He says, no, but, you know, you have to become serious, because in the future, you have to make all the disciples and all the next. The ones that are there now will be mine, but there's more people coming. Their children, other people. You have to take them. You know, I remember like that. So it's just what they do. But he's not talking about, you know, so you have to get strict and learn the scriptures and be able to get. No, no. It's just a matter of you have to be serious so you can do the guru duties. You know how to stand there, give blessings and smile. And, you know, do the whole thing, you know. Right? So in other words, you learn the etiquette of a guru. That's the thing. In India, they know the etiquette of a guru very nicely. They don't know what to do with it. Right? Like that. So what he's pointing out here is that's such a guru, that can be given up. So that's what it means by reinitiation. Because in this case, you weren't initiated. Right? The other case, you're initiated by a bona fide guru. There's no need of reinitiation. Initiation has been done. But a caste Goswami, it wasn't a Vaishnava initiation. It may have been the same ritual, but there was no chit potency. So in the beginning, you may not understand that, but with time, you understand that. Then, because you've come in contact with actually the bona fide devotees in the Sampradaya, then you may reject that person and therefore take Diksha from the. It doesn't mean that even being the family guru, you're not nice to him and everything like that. But it's just, it's not a spiritual initiation. Does that make sense? Like that. And also for most, it means upanayanam. It's not necessarily that the pancharatra is involved. But you know, if thus you do have the casco, they do give pancharatric mantras like that. So it may be that. So does that make some sense? So this is the first consideration. Not that the bona fide devotee, you know, he doesn't know the scriptures so well or this or that. This is not counting that. This one doesn't mean if you take an initiation within the society. It's not meaning that. It means if you took initiation before coming to the society. You know, does that make sense? You know, like that. Many scriptural sources support this course of action. For example, the Narada Pancharatra, as cited in Hari Bhakti Vilas. I think it's Narada Pancha. It says here, Pascharatra. Okay. Oh, I see. Yeah, okay. 162 states, quote, any person posing as an acharya but speaking unauthorized philosophy contrary to the teachings of the Shastra, and anyone who claims to be his disciple and hears such, thereby lending credibility to such nonsense, both of these are bound for hell. Right? So in other words, you're speaking nonsense and someone else says, no, this is good nonsense. You know, like that. I fully endorse this nonsense. Like that, then both go to hell. Right? That's what Manu's mentioning, is that if you yourself are preaching bogus philosophy, I mean, if you're practicing bogus philosophy, that's one thing. You preach it, that's worse. Yeah. Right, that. So then again, here we see is preaching it is worse, but then also endorsing it is also in that same category. You know, like that. The Mahabharata, Udyoga, Parvlaka, so now, why is here? We'll just go, oh yeah, of course. But those who have grown up in this stricter Vedic culture and the Kasko Smarta families and all that, for them, it's, you know, you've gone through the ritual, you've done all these things, they're Brahmins, there's so many things. How can you give them up? So out of sentiment, they're thinking it's improper. So that's why the Vedic sources are there, to show that this kind of guru can be rejected, because the rule is you can't reject the Diksha guru. Right? So therefore, like that. The Mahabharata Udyoga Parva 17925 explains in the story of Amba, a person who is wallowing in carnal pleasures and material comforts, who is confused about a human goal of life and is devoid of bhakti, and who poses as a guru, such a depraved charlatan must be rejected. It is said in the Hari Bhakti Vilas 4.1.4.4, if one receives Diksha Mantra from a non-Vaishnava who runs after women and is bereft of devotion to Sri Krishna, one is certainly doomed to hell. Therefore, one must immediately act according to scriptural injunctions and take reinitiation from a real, proper, qualified Vaishnava guru. Right? This is Hari Bhakti Vilas. This may be the quote that is used because it's the only one that ever uses this term reinitiation. Like that. It's not a generally used term because it's not generally used. So it's only in connection with this. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Does that make sense? Is that clear? Right. So the second reason is that if a guru who was a Vaishnava and knowledgeable in Krishna consciousness at the time of initiation becomes a Mayavadi and a Vaishnava hater as a result of bad association or otherwise, or he behaves immorally and sinfully, then the disciple must give him up. Right? Does that make sense? So you have the one he wasn't a Vaishnav, you know, so then there's no question of it. Then you have to take initiation from a bona fide Vaishnav. You're only saying reinitiation. Why? Because you probably used bona fide rituals of initiation before. Or it's just called initiation, so by terminology you just say you have to get initiated again. Right? Yes.
And whereas the Diksha Guru thinks responsibility for taking up particular jiva back to Godhead?
Yes, that's, it means if you're in the spiritual line, yes.
And if he doesn't, if he's in a fallen state?
Well, that's what now it's talking about here. So if he was knowledgeable in Krishna consciousness, but by bad association he's become a Mayavadi or someone who doesn't like Vaishnavas, right? He's opposed to the, you know, Vaishnava, then he's rejected. Or if he behaves immorally and sinfully, that means it's a consistent lifestyle. It doesn't mean something happened. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if that's the case, then if something happens with a disciple, then the guru can reject the disciple. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So, but if someone's living a sinful lifestyle and they're committed to that, that this is fine, then that's another question. You know what I'm saying? Because we see here it's the mentality. However, if the guru is neither inimical to Vaishnavas, nor a Mayavadi, nor addicted to sinful activity, so addicted, it didn't mean he did something. It means addicted means it goes on, right? It means someone's addicted to smoking, they can't stop smoking. Right? That's addiction. Not that he was caught out back smoking a cigarette. Right? And you tell him this is stupid and he doesn't smoke. So then that's not addiction. Like that. You understand? In other words, it's unworkable. That's the point. There's no way that they're going to give time for proper instructions or, you know, give instructions or that you would be find it comfortable, that interaction. It's unworkable. That's why that's given up. Right? Okay, nor addicted, however, if the guru is neither inimical to Vaishnavas, nor a Mayavadi, nor addicted to sinful activities, but, however, lacks knowledge of the scriptures, then his meager scriptural understanding should not be a cause for rejection. Right? So you can't apply that first one on devotees. You understand? That's why one has to be very careful where it applies, because there's two applications. So this thing is, he doesn't know the scriptures, doesn't know that applies to if he's not a devotee. If he's a devotee, then he's practicing. There's always something to learn. Plus, the connection is bona fide. Now, the nourishing of it, that's where the lacking is. Because the nourishment is by siksha. So you can't give siksha. So now, then it'll be explained. Therefore, you take siksha from someone else. But the connection is there. So this idea is, no, I have to have everything from one place, you know. Right? That's called, you know, Costco's or something. You know, you get everything in one place. You know, the point is no, you can get different things in different places.
Right? Usually they'll be better quality.
Yes. Yeah.
Mark?
Yes.
So reinitiation as it is inferior, like,
It's rare case. It means within the society, the need for it is actually not basically present. Right? The point is that connection is there because it's the siksha that keeps it alive. So as long as you have siksha gurus there. But the thing is so therefore for madhyamas, it's never a question. It's not necessary. Neophytes, because of sentiment, sometimes feel that there's some impurity in that connection. So by reconnecting like that, they feel inspired. So from that aspect, you can say it's okay, but it's still a neophyte thing. Then the problem is then, you know, Italy, you know, how you say, you know, buy nine, get one free, you know, then that kind of a thing, then they've created their own problem. Because the need for that, then after a while, you know, after, you know, the 10th reinitiation is kind of like, hey, you know. You know what I'm saying? But they've created, they didn't even have to start with one. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty with doing things that please neophytes, is that eventually it will have a problem. Because the neophyte platform, why do we call them neophyte? Because they're performing pure devotional service when they're performing devotional service. But the problem is there's always that element of also doing not pure devotional service. Does that make sense? Because there's only pure devotional service. There's not impure devotional service. When we say mixed devotional service, it means something mundane is mixed with pure devotional service. Right? So the problem is that mix. So if you're trying, so pure devotional service, you don't need these mundane considerations, right? Or sentimental considerations. But it's for the mix that is required. With that, you know, he's so far away from home, he might feel more at home. You know, the rainforest feel. You know, all that kind of thing.
Really?
Yeah, like that. Oh, he needs a few birds now and stuff like that.
Heavy wings.
Huh?
Those with the long beak.
Yeah, like that. Maybe an armadillo or two, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what is there. So to just do something because of what's mixed, because it's material what's mixed, it's always going to give problem. You have to consider the mix. You know, how to bring it to pure devotional service, but you can't drop pure devotional service because of the mix. So that's the weakness in making that as a choice. But it's popular, so hey. But then the problem is then without the proper understanding, it'll always be a problem down the road. You know what I'm saying? Because everything on that platform gives you a problem later. You know, you eat nice, and then later you have a stomach ache, or, you know, you sleep in, you know, that was really great, you know, but then you're in the mode of ignorance and can't figure anything out during the day, or, you know, so everything done to complement that will give you problem later, even though it works nicely now. You know, so that's why you can do, but as long as then along with that you're preaching pure devotional service so that you can bring it out of that to the standard. But if you leave it at that, it will create problem, then it has to be dropped. Anyway. Is that
all right, this principle seems to be a principle. This principle which you just mentioned seems to be like a principle where all the issues come up.
Yeah, all the issues come up.
Pure devotional service or something else.
That means there is no issues in pure devotional service. Right? Because issues are isms. Isms are pranamoy. Because we're not discussing actual dharma. What's the nature and what's that? People want to avoid that because it's not, oh, well, that's what the Vedas say. That's archaic. Oh, that's, you know, this, that. They'll get labeled at all kinds of things to drop it to pranamoy. Because pranamoy, what is pranamoy? Pranamoy is sense gratification, but you're considering other sense gratification, so it sounds noble. It's still sense gratification. But it is higher. It's a higher form of sense gratification, wanting to share or see that others are getting, but it's still sense gratification. That point is missed. But because it has uses nice words, you know, sentiments can be applied, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So that's there, but it's because there's an element of sacrifice, charity, austerity, So it's that, but if that's what makes it nice, so Dharma is a fuller manifestation of sacrifice, charity, and austerity. So hearing about that, it gives even more. Like hearing Ramayana or that, you know, invokes more feelings than if I hear about, you know, somebody, you know, taking care of some kids in Africa, right? You know, that's nice. But even more is then you hear about this greater sense of Dharma. You understand? So the problem is it all sounds nice, but in the long run it's not nice. Otherwise, why hasn't it solved our problems? People have been talking nice since the mid-90s, but is it working? You know what I'm saying? Is it working? No. Right? So you have to come up with a new nice. The reason, is because we didn't do it like this. That's called mental speculation, right? Mental speculation when the material thing doesn't work, so then you analyze, okay, I could, if I adjust it like this, then it will work. Right? Then I do it, then again. And then as long as you're inspired, you do that. Yeah. That's the born again philosophy. Because if you follow that, you'll be born again. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Does that work? So.
Just a question. Relating to that question about the Guru giving just principles of devotional service.
Right.
Those are the ones which actually solve our real problem. Right?
They solve the problem. But we want detail because we think in detail. So we think unless I'm getting detail, I'm not getting something of substance. But if you get the formula by which you can do that, you know what I'm saying? Let's say you give someone a recipe for cooking, right? And so that's the actual point, is that's the cooking element. That's what makes the cooking successful, that balance, those things, how much spice, what order to put it, you know, all the different things, what to look for, what are the symptoms. But now, going into the kitchen, then, you know, I don't know where that little clicker thing is to start the fire. I don't know which one to push because it's like, it's been rubbed off. So does this one go to that one, or does this one go to that one, like that? And, you know, can you drink the water from this tap, or do we have to, you know, all these, I have unlimited questions about it, you know, which pan to use, or some kinds like this. So then I will consider I didn't get proper instruction, right? But the point is that someone else in the kitchen can tell you that. But the other person in the kitchen can't tell you the recipe. You know what I'm saying? The guy that cleans the floor can tell you how to start the fire. Or the pot washer, or the guy who cuts the sabji. You know what I'm saying? They're not cooks, but they can tell you how to do all that. You know, they can say, well, I always see the guys use that pan for this kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? So there, but the recipe itself is what's important. Right? Does that make sense? So those are the those you can get from anybody who's around. So the element of Sadguru is that original recipe has come from Prabhupada. So then relevant instruction, how do you understand that recipe? You know, how to cultivate or develop that recipe. That's your Sadguru. Right? Does that make sense? You know? And others may give the same kind of instruction, but they're not there's no commitment to you as an individual. There's commitment to you as a member of the society, right? It means that the preacher comes and gives class and tries to answer your questions because you're a member of the society. It's not that they have a personal relationship with you in responsibility of taking you back to Godhead. That's the Sadguru. Does that make sense? Yes.
Does that mean what people are looking for with reinitiation, someone to take personal responsibility for them?
Yes, but the point is if it's understood Siksha Guru, that same is there, because we don't talk about Siksha Gurus on that level. Because when someone says, if we take the quote, Prabhupada says, all my disciples should be Guru. What does that mean? Right? We will take it as that means Diksha Gurus, therefore, you understand? But it simply means Guru means one who's instructing people in devotional service. You know, everybody's supposed to do that. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is the principle of siksha is not well appreciated or understood. Because if you include that, then you include everybody. You know, basically. And so that means then you have to be nice to everybody and give more facility to everybody. You know what I'm saying? So it's but that's the lack, is because that's the point, that the siksha is the transcendental element. The diksha is the element that considers our conditioning, so that's why we notice it and not the siksha. Because the siksha is Bhagavad. Right? But the pancharatrik diksha, that's because we're conditioned. That's why you need it. Liberated souls don't require pancharatrik diksha, because they take the siksha seriously, and they'll do it eternally. So they're already initiated. Does that make sense? No, so that's just why. You know, so it's like you said before. Because we're limited by time and space, we think that way, and you have to give examples and everything in the realm of time and space, because the mind can't think outside of that. So in the same way is that because of the conditioning, therefore initiation to us just means diksha. But the point is it's the instruction of the spiritual master that's important. You know, not specifically the interaction. Does that make sense? If you can get the interaction, that's nice. That's the vapu. But if you can't, then the instructions you can follow whether they're present or not. So you're always with the spiritual master by instruction. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maharaj, concerning the guru giving the main recipe, right? I find that many times when we actually get the point of that recipe from Prabhupada, which is giving Krishna to others in whatever activity we're doing, it seems so much more alive and perceivable by everyone. When we get sidetracked by the details you mentioned, the what button, and we put all attention into those,
yes,
it gets diluted. I see that.
Yeah. Happening. Well, that's what Prabhupada says, chanting, dancing, taking prasad. All these other things are so that you can do that. But we start to think that all those other things are more important. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we were saying before, is that arrangements are so that you can do the activity. You know what I'm saying? So let's say I'm arranging a dinner, okay? So now in arranging the dinner, you know, there's so much thought and effort goes into it, the menu, the arrangements there, whatever it is that you're doing. And then people come, but the point of it is so people can sit down together and have some pleasant interaction, right? So now it's natural when they come, because it's nice arrangement, they'll compliment. Oh, this is, you know, nice prasad, or nice arrangements, or nice menu, or stuff like that. But it's just a comment; it's not the main discussion. But sometimes, so person who understands the purpose is the interaction, then they're just happy that the devotees are happy. Does that make sense? You know, we're just happy that they're coming, they're sitting together, taking prasad, talking, you know, interacting. But you get sometimes someone is always worried that they're not noticing how much work went into arranging this thing. But the point is what's the work for? So we're taking away from interacting to appreciate how much work you put into it. But the point is nothing gets done without the work. So the smart person will notice that. The not smart doesn't, but it doesn't become the main focus, because it's what you do with it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that the qualified person appreciates the work, but it's about what you're going to do with that facility. It's not the facility. So we tend to look at the field of activity as opposed to what to do with that field. Right? And based on relationships. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing. It means the field activity, yes, as long as we get a result, then we're okay with that. But then when we have to start sharing that, that's more difficult. That's why pranamoy is higher. Right? We share it because we're supposed to, that's even more high. We share it without a desire for results for ourselves at all, then that's higher than that. That's moksha. But we share it because it's pleasing to Krishna and the Vaishnavas. That's the highest. So that's the first step, is just that. But it's the difficulty comes is that we think the field of activities. That's why we think we're the body. The body's the field. Right? So it's more about the body than what we're doing with the body. You know, even if we're doing something, it's about what comes back to the body. You know what I'm saying? I have a big house, and so then I can do this, and then the house becomes more prestigious, and then, you know, like this. And so we're just improving the facility, but what about the quality of interaction? That's lacking. Like that. So that's one of the major elements, especially that the conditioned soul has to deal with. Because he always thinks that the facilities are more important than the activity, or the activity is more important than the result, right? But the point is, and or the result's important on its own. It's only important because then that's what's offered to Krishna. So ultimately, Krishna's pleasure. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. So from what you're saying, it seems that our society will have all the levels of consciousness because people
yes.
come in. So a question which comes to mind is how to enhance the vision that is like that and it's everybody's making progress.
We preach the Majjhima culture with the Uttama understanding. Because the point is neophyte culture isn't culture. Right? Madhyama culture is, because that's the culture of pure devotion. The neophyte culture, the problem is it's not universal. Because the point is from one individual to next, their culture is different. You can get small groups of them together. Because think of it, okay, here we have many thousands of devotees, but what's the size of each circle?
Small,
right? Unless it's you're north of Kazakhstan border. Right? That's quite big. But other than that, that is very small. You know, but I guarantee within that, it will be small little groups within. Right? Does that make sense? Because, in other words, who you associate with, who you interact with, it's just a few people. Why? Because you have something common. The next group culturally has something different common. It means culture, meaning here on conditioning. Right? But on sadhana and that, you can pack the devotee with thousands, tens of thousands of devotees, and everyone's doing the same thing. Right? Does that make sense? Right. So the point is on the personal level, then it's so much different. That's why if there's varnashram, one, there's more common basis, and two, you have a system how all those different mentalities can still interact and have a more dynamic culture. Because this other one, it's this group and that group, they don't interact. And there's no method for them to interact. You know what I'm saying? So that's why varnashram is recommended, but that's also why it's not, you don't set up things for the neophyte standard, because there isn't one. There is no universal. But the Madhyama, because it's pure devotional service, there's a universal standard. So that's the common lifestyle, is the Madhyama. We may be neophyte by realization, but the lifestyle is Madhyama. So as soon as you make the neophyte platform as standard, then which one? You know, I mean, if you look at it on the universal platform, of course it has to be American, right? But the problem is, except for Americans, no one else likes Americans. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, you could say Canadians are probably the best, the most tolerant of them, you know, because they live right next door and they're quite accommodating, actually, the Canadians. But like that, you know. But, you know, and how you say, and south of America, south of the American border, they have a different plan. They'll just come in and take over. You know, that, you know. So they work it out. But the point is somehow or another it's taken that middle class, you know, university educated American, that's the universal culture for everybody on the planet. But it's not at all. It doesn't even apply to all Americans. It's a very small amount. So which one you'll take? So we'll take the British. I mean, they are the source of Americans and Australians, so that would be more broad than American, right? You know, it has some at least some tradition there, you know, like that. But, you know, I don't, that means the Australians would go for the, you know, the chips and stuff like that. Americans don't really like them, you know, like that. So, you know, you're going to have some major problems, you know, do you put ketchup on your chips or do you put vinegar on your chips? I mean, these are make it or break it things. You know, mayonnaise, oh my God, yeah.
So, okay. Like Central Europe.
Yeah, so that, yeah, well, that means those from there who keep that
sour
connection.
Cream.
Huh?
Sour cream.
Sour cream. Okay. Yeah? Well, I've seen butter. Ever seen that? French fries with butter? I've seen that. Amazing. It's good. I tried it once. It's quite good. It doesn't mean you put it on like popcorn. It means you have a chunk of butter there. You just take your chips and just take some butter and eat it. Like that. Pretty far out. But it works. Okay. So, you're going to have a problem there. Because then, okay, so then the British are European, but they're that somehow because of that being on the island, it does something to them, you know, kind of like, you know, there's a water on all sides, kind of like, you know, North America, water on all sides, it does something to them, you know, so it doesn't quite work. I don't know, maybe all the salt air does something in their brain or something, you know, it's like, like coconuts grow where there's salt, you know, so like that, they get kind of a coconut brain or something, I don't know, whatever it is, we're not going to get into it, but... The point is that the continental Europeans is like they're not going to agree with that at all, right? And then the Western Europeans and then the Eastern Europeans have a different thing. And then you go farther into Asia, they got a different thing. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that, and there we've just gone across that way. Now what happens if we head south? You know, so it's completely different. And what they do in continental Europe, what they do in far northern Europe, that's also different. You know, continental Europe is like, what is it, like in Holland, you know, how much you can pack into one space is good, you know, but you go up to Sweden and, you know, the closest your neighbor should be is at half a kilometer. 1 kilometer, that's standard, like that.
If he can shoot you, he will. Then you're too close.
Okay. Well, that's a good way to tell. Okay. Yeah, and a rifle is good for about 900 meters. So, yeah, so 1 kilometer safe. You got a 100 meter, you know, I say, buffer zone. Okay. Yeah, good. Okay, that makes sense. Okay. I guess Americans is closer because they use shotguns. So
yeah,
then,
they don't need that well.
Then you don't have to be so far away. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. I like that. Does that make sense? So how do you do it? You can't, but the Madhyama culture is universal because it has standards, it has qualities that even though you don't have it, you act according to that. That's why there's duty. Duty means you do this whether you're actually that qualified or not or want to do it or not. That's what you're supposed to do to make it function. Like that, you know. And by doing that, you become qualified. Right? So when you do it in relation to devotional service, then all these things naturally come. Because a devotee naturally develops them. And so then, and doing these pious activities between the two, it works very nicely. So that's why trying to establish a neophyte culture will never work. It can't work. It's impossible, mathematically impossible. It's not working anywhere else. Does that make sense? So that's why then the Madhyama, that's why we preach pure devotional service. We don't preach mixed devotional service. We teach how to engage mixed devotional service in pure devotional service. Right? In other words, you're doing pure devotional service, then there's the mix. How to take the mix and turn that into pure devotional service. That's what we talk about. Right? But people are very comfortable with that mix. They don't want it to turn into pure devotional service, therefore they don't want to hear about it. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's where it gets, oh, it's too ritualistic, it's too this and that. Why? Because otherwise, how do you connect that? Yeah. That's the whole. Is that okay? Okay. In this case, means when he has lacks scriptural knowledge, right? But he's, you know, devotee. In this case, the disciple may approach his guru with due deference to procure his permission to receive spiritual knowledge and instructions from an advanced pure Vaishnava, and thus engage in serving and learning from that knowledgeable Vaishnava, right? He never rejected it.
Mm.
All it means is the diksha is in place, the siksha, because that's why you go to the diksha gurus for siksha. You just get the siksha somewhere else. Right? That's the idea. Footnote 7. Narhari Sarkar states in the Sri Krishna Bhavanamrita, verses 59, 63 to 65, if the spiritual master commits a wrongful act, breaking Vaishnava relative principles, that he upset his grandmother. Then in that case, one should, in a solitary place, confront him for his rectification, using logic and appropriate conclusions from sadhu, shastra, and guru references. Okay, but one is not to give him up, right? The authorized course of action is to continue as before with one's prescribed devotional service. One may take guidance, though, or instructions from the Vaishnavas, as all Vaishnavas are considered guru or spiritual master. Or one may use one's own intelligence, duly considering the relevant instructions from sadhu, shastra, and guru. In all cases, one should continue in one's devotional service. So here it's saying is, if he's broken the regulative principles like that, then he should be confronted. It says here in a solitary place. That didn't mention internet like that. Somehow or another, it didn't come up like that. Right, means if it's said in a public place or a public forum, then one can maybe say, okay, the internet makes it a bigger public forum. But it said solitary place, and confront him using logic and appropriate conclusions from Shastra, not morality. Hmm. Not social, disturbance, not that. Because the point is it's a matter of being corrected in devotional service. Right? So then you do that for his rectification. Right? Then it mentions that you should therefore then go on taking instruction from specific Vaishnavs in general, or just using what you've already received from the Vaishnavs and applying it in your life. Does that make sense? All Vaishnavs are gurus, so you can take instruction there. You have specific, like this and that. Does that make sense? So that's the normal thing, right? However, if the spiritual master acts envious towards that which is connected with the Supreme, is bewildered regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is averse to expanding the fame of Lord Krishna, personally refuses to accept hearing or chanting about the glorious pastimes of Sri Krishna, has become totally bewildered listening to the false praise of ignorant persons, and day by day is more materially contaminated and fallen, then the spiritual master must be renounced. Right? So basically, when he gives up devotional service, then it's renounced, right? And some of these things may not apply, false praise of ignorant persons, because the point is if he's in that caste Goswami or that kind of thing, he still will have people who will praise him, even if it's not within the Vaishnava circle. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, when he's dropped from the Vaishnava platform down to the Smarta platform, or down into just regular materialistic platform. Under those circumstances, one should not doubt, how can I give up my spiritual master? With a strong desire for achieving spontaneous devotional service and attaining the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee accepts the shelter of a spiritual master. If that spiritual master takes on asuric qualities or a demoniac mentality, then it is one's duty to reject such a demon asura guru and in his place accept a Krishna conscious spiritual master and worship him. Okay? Mm-hmm. So then it means fine points within it. So now he's made it very clear, because before, otherwise we can say, oh, he did something, I said, oh, what about doing this? Oh, that's not nice. Oh, see, he's rejecting the devotees. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? You can so easily do that. It means the neophyte is really good at doing that. Well, not even neophyte, just the religionist is really, really good at doing that. You can just take anything and turn it into that you're a total absolute nonsense. But here it says, it makes the word asuric, means, so there's a definition of asuric. It means it's against devotional service. Not you don't agree with this devotee or that devotee. Right? It means you're actually against the devotional principles, against the devotional practices. Right? The devotional association. So such a person, they're rejected. Okay? So it's not just on a whim there. And then the other fun part here is that with a strong desire for achieving spontaneous devotional service and attaining the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee accepts the shelter of a spiritual master. Did he mention morality there? Did he mention anything social there? No. In other words, The reason is this person can't give me pure devotional service. That's why they're rejected, and I'm taking shelter of others. It's not because he's bad, that's why I'm taking shelter of others. No, I want pure devotional service, so I'm taking shelter of those who can give pure devotional service. It's still in the positive. Right? I'm not rejecting him because he was immoral. Because then the point is okay, you've rejected him, now what? Right? And so then, oh well, he behaved like that. So if he did that, you know, then how can any of us make it? So therefore, I'll take up, you know, material life also. So that rejection was not proper because it wasn't based on the principle of gaining pure devotional service. Because if it's theirs, okay, this person can't offer that. You know, you check from all, just as you test the guru that he's bona fide, you have to test to see that he's not. Right? It's not just a sentiment. And then one takes shelter of those who can give pure devotional service. Right? But one has to, but it says on Shastra, you know, how you say, one has to know the Shastra. Otherwise, then, most devotees don't know what pure devotion means. So then the problem is it's not, you know, they can't see a Madhyama is a pure devotee. An Uttama is a pure devotee. Right? The Prema Bhakta is a pure devotee. Right? So they have these problems come up. Okay. And then the last point here, and in his place accept a Krishna conscious spiritual master and worship him. Right? It didn't say initiation. That you take it that way, it's okay. You could interpret it that way, but it's not specifically saying that. Like that other verse said, take reinitiation because your initiation wasn't bona fide. But now you've made that bona fide connection. What's the problem? You want to attain pure devotional service. That instruction's not there. It doesn't say the connection's not there. It doesn't. Did it say anywhere your connection is broken? But that's how devotees may interpret it. It doesn't say your connection is broken. If he was a bona fide spiritual master, and then something goes wrong, the connection's not broken. What's lacking is the instruction to nourish it. You know what I'm saying? I planted the creeper. It's planted. What does it need now? Does it need to be replanted? It needs to be watered. So that instructions, that's the water. So if the guru can't give those instructions to water, then you find someone else who has water. Right? Does that make sense? It's very straightforward, you know, but due to our own, you know, conditionings, then we will interpret these things in other ways. But as we pointed out, even you interpret in those other ways, it still will work. But the problem is because it's not actually directly what it's saying, those side things can cause problems later. They may not. If you take up, get our sincere about pure, spontaneous, pure devotional service, it won't create a problem. Right? But if it's simply that, okay, this guy wasn't moral, this guy is, then you're going to have a problem in your devotional service. It's got to be, where can I gain pure devotional service? Does this make sense? So it's a whole thing. In other words, the neophyte has to see it from the perspective of knowledge, not his sentiment. Because the neophyte's sentiment, if it's manifesting pure devotion, is great. It's perfect. But if it's manifesting mundane, what's so special about it? Everybody's mundane. So why is the devotee's mundanity, you know, so special? Does that make sense? So that's ordinary dealings. You deal with it on the ordinary platform. So it's not a consideration for spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? Does that work? Yeah? Yes.
Backing up just a little bit, so you're confronting the spiritual master, the word was used. That's the disciple confronting, or just a peer of the spiritual master confronts?
It means in other places it means the same author. What's his name? Narhari Sarkar. Ben, he says that if you're in a position or confident, you know, that you could have some effect yourself, you do. If not, you approach those who can. And that's not the internet. That's called Pajalpa. 100%. There's no other definition. You know what I'm saying? This idea that it's truth and knowledge, everybody has the right to know. Nobody has the right to know. The point is it's his personal life. He's taken a public position, but it's only public in that he's dealing with a greater amount of people. But that doesn't mean, means he's public in the way he's speaking the class, but his private life is his private life. Just like everybody else's individual, their private life is their private life. So those who are qualified to deal with it, then are there. Otherwise, everybody has an opinion. Who cares? You know what I'm saying? The point is let's say there's a problem with the car, right? Everybody's got an opinion. But who should be giving an opinion? A mechanic. So if you're a mechanic, then you talk about it. If you're not a mechanic, if you can't fix it, don't talk about it. It's not your position. It's not your right to know. Because you don't know what to do with that. So this modern thing, this is means the ones who do this as a formal social is an accepted norm. It's not kind, means it's the policy. Rather than just kind of accepting everybody does it, that's in the Far East. You have to come in front of the public, you have to stand there, say that you're such a, you know, an idiot and this and that, and lament and cry and fall on the ground. And, you know, if you shoot yourself, that's even better. Right? You know? You know what I'm saying? Then that's, okay, that was good, but that's formalized. What does it have to do with Vaishnava culture? Zero. So it's not, it has no value, it doesn't inspire anybody. It's a great disservice. So anybody who uses it is doing a great disservice to Prabhupada's mission. It's that simple. There's no support. These are the evidences. These verses that are here, these are the whole evidence on how you deal with this. There aren't more quotes. That's all there is, because it's a rare thing. But it's always been going on. Narahari Sarkar says, this problem has been there since the time of Lord Chaitanya. There have been gurus falling down since Lord Chaitanya's time. It's not a modern thing that, oh, we in ISKCON have this problem. It's always been going on. And so if there's a problem, this is how you deal with it. But generally speaking, it's not a problem. So you focus on what you're supposed to be doing. And even if there is a problem, the problem is you can't do what's ideal. So how to arrange it so that you can do what's ideal? How do you get pure devotion? That's what's there. That's the point. It's not a matter of morality and social acceptance and this and that. That's all nonsense. That's why we joined this mission, is because we got tired of that nonsense. You know, that's why the karmis are still looking for solutions, because they're already doing that and they're not satisfied, so they come up with something new. Is that okay? Yeah. Is this, everybody's surviving this? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So the whole point is says, and thus engage in serving and learning from the knowledgeable Vaishnavas. That's the position. There's no need of reinitiation. I'm saying the neophyte he wants, you can do it. It's not something you can't do, but the Shastra never says that it should be done. Right? Unless, of course, as we said, you had a, you know, smart Brahmin guru before you joined, or, you know, or worse, you know, somebody, you know, out of Hrishikesh, or, you know, something you dug up somewhere, you know, like that, then get reinitiation. Yes, but if that's not the case, it doesn't apply.
Would we even call it reinitiation then?
Means in English they use that, but it's used. But the point is you have to know what initiation is. Otherwise, how do you know what re-initiation? If I say refried beans, means the point is do I know how to fry them in the first place? Otherwise, how do I refry them? You know what I'm saying? So the problem is the discussion is on reinitiation when initiation is not understood. Mm. If you don't know what that is, mm. how do you know what reinitiation is? You know, it's just logical. Yeah. Vijay, what are the usual procedures for the second limb of devotional service? Okay, so he's satisfied here. Which is receiving diksha in Krishna mantra and siksha in the science of Krishna consciousness from the guru. Okay, so the diksha is in the mantra. You have the mantra, it's there. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? It's just like this. Let us say you are there, you bumped into the devotees. Okay, one of the new bhaktas there teaches you how to chant, you know, arranges you get some beads, gives you a little card with a mantra, you know, and you sit down, you learn chanting. So now you're chanting Hare Krishna, okay? Has it ever come up, has anybody ever thought that, is that person who I got that, he taught me, what happens if he bloops? Do I have to go to another devotee and get another card? Or? No, because the point is you've received the name. You don't worry about that. Right? The people have gotten married. Right? The priest did the marriage. Right? What happens if the priest bloops? Is the marriage finished? No. You understand? That's the point. Once it's connected, it's connected. Now it's a matter of, is it being nourished here, right? Receiving diksha in the Krishna mantra and siksha in the science of Krishna consciousness, right? So the mantra is there. Now what do we require? Siksha. So once the diksha ceremony is over, now it's all about siksha, 100%. There is no other consideration. So now it's just a matter of continuing with siksha. Right? It's quite simple, actually. Right? It's not a complicated thing. You know, we love to make things complicated. That's why there's prajalpa. But you know, gossip. Gossip is how to make something really simple complicated. Right? How to bring all emotions and all kinds of things into something that doesn't really require it. Right? Like that. That's the Raghunath Das Babaji. One must take siksha from his guru in Archan and Shuddha Bhakti, as enunciated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Thus, one should be trained to execute Krishna's seva favorably and regularly. And with heartfelt simplicity, one should cultivate Krishna prema. It is certainly indispensable that one receive siksha from the guru in the bhakti concepts of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Okay. Okay, so then this explains that part. It's the second limb is that you've taken initiation, heard instructions. So that's the initiation is done. Then you get instructions in how to worship the deity and how to cultivate pure devotional service. Right? So then you have that right attitude, right? Simplicity, heartfelt simplicity, cultivate prema. Right? So it doesn't get complicated. Right? That doesn't mean simple tongue, it just means keep it simple. Right? Vijay, kindly explain the third limb, how to serve the guru with faith and devotion. Raghunath Das Babaji, one should not see the guru as an ordinary mortal human being, but as a representative of Sri Krishna, and the best of and the embodiment of all the devas. One should never the best of, because the devas are working on behalf of the Lord, but working on the behalf of the Lord for spiritual is better than for material, for universal management. Right? So that's why he's the best of the devas. Yeah. One should never disobey the orders of the guru, nor disrespect him in any way. Know that he is Guru Tattva, an expansion of the transcendental Vaikuntha principle, a resident of the spiritual world. Vijaya, what is the meaning of the fourth limb? Okay, so faith and devotion. So that means is basically that you don't see him as ordinary and you don't disrespect. That's the point. And then whatever is so that's the faith and devotion. It's not the, you know, what pomp and splendor you make. That's just part of adding something, yes.
How does this considering one's guru as the representative of God relate to the previous sections about having a fallen guru or accepting a new siksha guru? One transfers that kind of conception to...
Yes. I mean, the point is he's still not ordinary. He's just not necessarily in a position to function. Because the point is once someone's come in contact and taken up sincerely devotional service, they don't become demoniac. They're still not ordinary. Because you may say, oh, they're engaged in sense gratification, but they know about Krishna, know that that's not ideal. Mm-hmm. But the karmi doesn't know that. Mm-hmm. So you can't compare them at all. Mm-hmm. Right? But within the devotional community, that's not an ideal situation, because then the distraction is too great. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So they're still not ordinary. A neophyte devotee is not ordinary. Mm-hmm. You know, so the principle of guru is even... you know, how you say, more, less ordinary, right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that there's nothing ordinary in devotional service. So that's why I say, well, ordinary dealings means dealing with your conditioning. That's ordinary. Right? Does that make sense? Now, you know, even Superman, he still has to go into a phone booth. You know what I'm saying? That's pretty ordinary. Right? Now, what does he do in London? There's only a couple of phone booths. He'll have a lot of problem there.
You never see him around anymore.
Yeah. And in Finland, there are no... They made a move to get rid of them all. There are no public phones in Finland. Right? Because Nokia is from there. So that way, everybody has to get a phone. Like that. So...
Phone shop,
okay, yeah, maybe. Usually I step into the phone shop. Okay. You let up, you start using public bathrooms or something. It doesn't have quite the same dynamic entrance. You know, you open the door and fly off, kind of open the door, kind of get it, wash your hands. You know, kind of, okay. Mommy, Superman didn't wash his hands. Yeah. Modern culture makes a lot of problems, doesn't it? Okay. Vijaya, what is the meaning of the fourth limb following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas? Raghunath Das Babaji. According to the precepts of sadhana bhakti, the devotee should use each and every means to attach his mind to Sri Krishna. However, one should follow the path endorsed by the previous acharyas. Right? In other words, you do whatever it takes to be engaged in devotional service, but you follow that path that the previous acharyas have established. Right? Because otherwise, there's unlimited ways you could do something, so you choose those ones that have been used by the acharyas. Because that works. That's recommended. Such a path is without distress. It is the source of peace and benediction, and is the easy, straight road of advancement. Right, because they're pure devotees, so they're naturally going to take that which is the most favorable to pure devotion. Right, they're not conditioned, so they're not going to make any mistakes on what is favorable for pure devotion. Right, and they're functioning here; they're applying that here. How they live their lifestyle here, you can't say that it's different. You know what I'm saying? What's different means the man goes home, right? You know, his wife is there, his kids are there, he has a house, there's a kitchen, there's a bathroom, there's a toilet, right? You know, there's all these different things. So the point is there's him, there's his family, there's house, money's required, you know, proper interaction, you know, dealing with the kids getting educated. Has that changed in the last 3,000 years? No. You know, so definitely not in the last 500 years. Right? So what's changed? Okay, maybe instead of riding a horse or going on a bullock cart, now you get into a car. You know what I'm saying? But that you can't call change. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the thing is nothing's changed. You can't say, well, that was 500 years ago, so that doesn't apply to today. What doesn't apply to today? Okay, you didn't have a mobile phone. So what has that got to do with how you deal with people? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is personal relationships, devotional service doesn't change. It's nitya. What changes is maybe the environment you're in, but that changes from moment to moment. If that's the case, then what we're discussing right now works in this place. But as soon as you step outside of this place, it doesn't apply anymore.
As soon as you finish the sentence.
Yeah, as soon as you finish, it's gone. Times have changed. Like that. Does that make sense? Otherwise, it won't apply. You know, you're in Europe. They're driving on the right side of the road.
Yeah,
but then you go to England, they're driving on the left. You go to America, they're driving on the right. You know, so it's just, it's always changing. So then, what is that thing that's universal to here? That's the illusion that there's some universal modern thing. There isn't one. Absolutely not. So the only universal is devotional service. Is that? The correct path cannot be properly discovered and charted by any single individual. Therefore, a succession of acharyas has clarified the areas of difficulty which may have been clouding the path of Shuddha Bhakti. Because each one will bring out something special. Right? And so that's why the line of acharyas is important, because each one adds something unique. Does that make sense? Thus, now the path of bhakti is finally defined and ready to be followed by all. The Brahma Yamala describes, quote, even single-minded devotional service to the Lord that ignores the tenets of authorized Vedic literatures, like the Upanishads, Puranas, Narada, Pascharatra, etc., simply creates an unnecessary disturbance in society. Right, so you're focused, you're doing devotional service, you're doing it for Krishna, but you're ignoring actually the scriptures and the previous acharya. It's a disturbance. That's all. Because Krishna wants you to do things. You're in a group. Right? You're in a group. Yeah, you know, we're in a group. Here, and when the spiritual, you're in a group. The coward boys are in a group. They don't go, you know, hang out with Mother Jashoda. They have their group. Right? Mother Jashoda hangs out with the elderly gopis. Right? The young gopis hang out with the young gopis. You're in a group. You know, within that group, there's groups. Right? Elder cowherd boys, equal cowherd boys, younger cowherd boys, confidential cowherd boys. Right? Those who are messengers. You know, all these different things are there. So, there are all these different groups. So you have your group, you work within it, and then you know how to function with all the other groups. Right? So, the thing is if you can't follow what others have done, how are you going to fit into the spiritual world? It's not going to happen. Right? So that's why like-minded, you know, like-natured persons who are more advanced, that's who you associate with. You know? Like that. And then within that, you deal with everybody else nicely. Vijaya. Respected Guruji, kindly explain how even single-minded devotion to the Supreme Lord can be the cause of disturbance. Raghunath Das Babaji. Real single-minded actual devotion is possible only when one is traversing the path of Shuddha Bhakti as formulated by the previous acharyas. So when we say single-minded, it means real single-minded won't bother that because it already is following the path of the acharyas. It's when you think it's single-minded devotional service, right? Any other method or a new concocted path simply leads to a dead end. An inexperienced and myopic preachers such as Dattatreya, Buddha, and other recent speculative thinkers could not properly comprehend the science of Shuddha Bhakti. Yet they have ventured to deviate from the authorized path, thus warping it, and have selected whimsically at random a little here and there from the original established ideas. Right? So that means that's what the six systems are, is they're all like that, inexperienced and myopic. One group has added impersonal Mayavad thought to the path, whilst the other has practically destroyed it with voidistic atheism. Such teachers imagined that these horrible and ugly falsely established philosophies would foster single-minded devotion to the Supreme Lord. However, this is untrue and mistaken. Such perversion of the path cannot evoke Shuddha Bhakti, but only chaos and disturbance. Right? So interesting here is he's adding this point is that there's the path is only the path of pure devotion. But because of their inexperience and, you know, narrow-mindedness in a particular area, they've added that to the path. So they've made it mixed. So it's not now Shuddha Bhakti, but they're saying this mixed path will give Shuddha Bhakti. But it doesn't. It just creates disturbance. So the actual original purpose is that. Does that make sense? The cultivation of Rag Bhakti, spontaneous devotional service, does not depend upon an adherence to the regulations and stipulations as enunciated in the Shruti, Smriti, and Puranas, and Pancharatric scriptures, which are especially earmarked for the practice of Vaidhi Bhakti. Okay. Elevated devotees performing Rag Bhakti are required to follow the eternally liberated residents of Braja Dham in the spiritual world. Right? Does this make some sense here, where you see the connection here? It means, one is saying, see, you don't have to follow these rules, but what's left is you have to follow what the previous acharyas did. Right? Because that's what Raganuga is. You're Rag Anuga. It means you're following in the path, the Anuga, of those with Rag. So the same principle of following the previous acharyas is then the rule of Raganuga. Does that make sense? So the point is they are following the rules of devotional service. So if you follow what they do, you're following the rules. But it's not you're following the rules because you're following the rules, you're following what they do. Does that make sense? So the switch goes from following the rules because, you know, the intellect and all that, following because it's something you want to do. So it already encompasses, already includes the proper. The rules of Vaidhi are already included. But the motive is not following the rules. The motive is simply to please the devotees, or because one appreciates doing this, one likes this. Does this make some sense? However, for the devotees on the level of Vaidhi Bhakti, it is imperative to follow the examples of the great spiritual stalwarts like Dhruva, Prahlad, Narad, Vyas, Sukadeva Goswami, and so on. Hence, especially for the devotees following Vaidhi Bhakti, the only authorized method is to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. But it's the same thing. Right? They have to follow it because it's rules. So it gets the difference because it appears that it overlaps. Is the point is this, you're following because it's rules, or you're following because that's what you want to do? That's the difference. Rules remain the same. You know, the rules are just what you do. Now, you're following the rules because you want to follow rules, or you're doing it only because it is rules and you have to do it, or you're doing it because that's what you like to do. Does that make sense? You know, somebody cooks because they have to, somebody cooks because they like to. But the cooking remains the same. They follow the same rules. So, does that make sense? Vijaya, what is the fifth limb? Saddharma jigyasa, acquiring from the spiritual master about how to advance in devotional service. Oh. Well, okay. Went by more quickly today. Right, because we had a devotional issue. Right?
Always good.
Yeah. You're getting bored?
Been a while.
Start an issue. Yeah.
I could go for a good issue today.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki,
Jai
Sāma Vedā Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitāya Gaura Pīngana.
Jai Gaura.